I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is Wednesday, March 6th at 8:35 p.m. We are assisted today by the LIO moderator, Emily Mesh, and our committee secretary, Leah Frazier. Present, members present, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Fulm, Representative Ortiz, Representative Kronk, Representative Foster, myself, Representative Johnson. Today we will be hearing a FY25 budget overview from the Department of Natural Resources. Today in the room we have Commissioner John Boyle, Deputy Commissioner Brent Goodrum, Deputy Commissioner John Crowther, Administrative Services Director Teresa Cross. Also, we have members of the department here with us to answer questions telephonically, and we have been joined by Representative Tomaszewski. Is there any questions or business before we begin? Seeing none, feel free to come forward, or please come forward, introduce yourself, Commissioner Boyle, and introduce your team. State your affiliations for the record, and you may proceed with your presentation. Welcome to House Finance.
Well, good morning, Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Foster, and honorable members of the Finance Committee. This is John Boyle, Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, for the record. As you point out, I'm joined here at the table by my Deputy Commissioner Brett Goodrum and my Support Services Director Teresa Cross, and it's a pleasure to present our budget to you today. I think all of us that are involved in state service understand the sacrifices involved as we put the needs of the people of the state ahead of our own. And at DNR, we felt that even more deeply this past year with the loss of three of our colleagues who died in the line of duty as they were working to serve the people of the North Slope on the A-STAR project. Ronnie Danen, Justin Gurman, and Tori Moore were all involved in doing hydrological and other surveying work on the North Slope when, unfortunately, their helicopter experienced some kind of catastrophic failure and crashed into a lake up there. And, you know, it's something that hit the department very hard. It certainly hit our Division of Geological and Geophysical Survey team very hard because these folks work very closely together. And their contributions to the state when it comes to understanding our geologic hazard and other natural systems is left a lasting legacy for all of us to honor and to keep in mind. And one of the things that we have been working on since this event this last summer is ensuring that we've got the right types of protocol, the right types of safety mechanisms in place to help ensure that our people can be as safe as they possibly can, because every year we send our folks to the tops of volcanoes and to glaciers and to landslide areas and to all other corners of the state with the attendant risks that are evident in traveling in small fixed wings or rotary aircraft. And so we want to ensure that all of our people come home safe, return to their families each and every day. And so we certainly are using this as an opportunity to ensure that we have the right safety protocols in place so that we can feel confident as we ask our people to go out and to serve. So I'll go ahead and kick into the organizational chart. Of course, you know me, and it's my pleasure to lead what is the best department in the state, and I will gladly sit here and debate with any other commissioner, but DNR is I think, head and shoulders above all the other departments in the state. We have a special culture within DNR. I think people that work for DNR, they're here because they want to make a difference. They want to maximize and conserve and develop the state's resources for the benefit of the people of the state. And we work every day to build and facilitate that culture. One of the things that we're working on this year is an initiative that I call DNR 2033, and which is, you know, transforming Alaska's future today. And so for all of our new employees, you know, we instill in them that you've come to work in this department and the awesome responsibility that's yours to manage the state's resources to shape the future of the state. Because as many of you know, I mean, DNR is the primary breadwinner of the departments. We bring in all of the lion's share, I should say, of the revenue that the state relies upon for providing services for its citizens. And so all of us take our roles and responsibilities within the department very seriously, and with a sense that the better that we perform our work, the more benefits that we can bring to our fellow citizens, and the better we can shape the future to create more opportunities for our kids and our grandkids and future generations of Alaskans. So I'm assisted by my two capable deputy commissioners, Brett Goodrum and John Prother. Under Brett Goodrum, he oversees the Division of Agriculture, where we were joined last year by Brian Scoresby as our new director. As some of you may know, I love agriculture. It's just one of the parts of my portfolio that I really enjoy, and there's the department is working on a lot of new initiatives as it relates to agriculture, as it relates to food security across the state. That also includes efforts in mariculture and other endeavors that provide economic opportunities for Alaskans and help, again, provide a measure of food security. So we're very excited to be continuing to work with the Division of Agriculture to deliver more and better services for our people. We also have the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. That's the primary agency with responsibility for managing our lands and our leases and things of the like. They do a phenomenal job within that team, led by Christy Calls, who's the director. We have our Division of Forestry and Fire Protection, led by our state forester, Helge Eng. And again, forestry is another very exciting part of DNR's portfolio. It's a very important industry to the state. It doesn't always come with all the bling and all of the big numbers that some get chalked up to the oil and gas sector, the mining sector, but forestry is very important, particularly here in Southeast, but also in other parts of the state, like Tok and Fairbanks and in the Mattsu Valley. And so we continue to look for efforts working with you and others to improve and build upon our forest industry sector. And of course, to also protect the state from wildfire, which is another key function of that division. We have our Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation. Of course, that's led by Ricky Geese. I think I'm not telling anybody anything they don't know here, but Alaska has by far the best state park portfolio of any other state. I could list off myriad of our parks, and I think if you were to place any one of them in any other state, they would be national parks. They would be recognized as incredible treasures, and I think sometimes we take for granted that we've been endowed with so much natural beauty and so much phenomenal areas for Alaskans to go and recreate and enjoy. And I think with parks, we have a tremendous opportunity to manage our parks in a way that we can generate more revenue for the state and also maintain and upkeep our parks to the condition that I think all of us would like to see them in, and recognize their role that they play in kind of the outdoor economy in the state, which is, again, another sector of our economy that DNR is focused on. And then lastly, under Deputy Commissioner Goodrum, we have our Division of Support Services, which is led by Teresa Cross. In just a minute, you'll see how valuable Teresa is to our organization as she helps keep us all in line and help us understand the mechanics of what holds everything together. Under Deputy Commissioner Crowther, we have our Division of Oil and Gas, and that's led by Derek Nottingham. Derek's doing a great job with his team and really overseeing this renaissance that's going on the North Slope as we see increased activity there. And he and his team will be key as we work forward and discuss Cook Inlet energy policy moving forward. We have our Division of Geological Geophysical Surveys, led by Melanie Warden. Melanie was a longtime DNR employee. She's worked for the department for many years, and I was very pleased when she agreed to step out of her previous role and step up to serve as director. Dr. Warden is the consummate geologist. I think she would love to be spending time in her office looking at rocks and nerding out on all of her geology responsibilities. But she's done a great job leading DGGS, and really that division does so much of the characterization work and the informs the science that helps to that helps the state understand the natural resource base that we have, particularly as it relates to oil and gas and minerals, and hopefully with your blessing as well, our geothermal energy resources. And so we really look to DGGS to help drive and identify new opportunities for the state. So the work that they do is very important. Then we also have our Office of Project Management and Permitting. That's led by Ashley Adoko. OPUMP, as we call it, is really tasked with helping to permit large projects of all stripes. And OPUMP in particular is going to be key as we see the implementation of the Infrastructure Act monies that relate to broadband infrastructure. So as you can imagine, there's a number of communities, a number of different projects, all of which involve many different types of permits. And because of the tight timelines associated with that implementation, OPUMP is really going to be critical to help these communities, these organizations that are developing this broadband infrastructure to get all of the permitting and things that they need in hand so that we can see this money deployed and see those benefits brought throughout the state. And of course, they're also key in supporting the big new North Slope development projects that we're currently witnessing develop across the North Slope. And then lastly, we have our Mental Health Trust Land Office, which is led by Justy Warner, who does a great job managing the Mental Health Trust asset portfolio. So with that, I will turn things over to my capable support services division director, who can start walking us through the remainder of the discussion. Of course, I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Commissioner Boyle. For the record, my name is Teresa Cross, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Natural Resources. I want to thank you for this opportunity. My high-level budget overview presentation begins on slide 4. The table on the top left represents our FY23 actuals and a comparison of FY24 management plan to the proposed FY25 Governor's amended budget. Please note that our FY23 actuals data includes a total of $58 million in unrestricted general fund fire emergency declarations. When you look at that top left table, you will notice that our most significant change is in our unrestricted general funds category, an increase of approximately $6.8 million, followed by our designated general funds category, an increase of approximately $3.5 million. The unrestricted general fund increase is largely represented by four items within the Division of Forestry and Fire Protection, one item within the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys, and department-wide salary adjustments. The designated general fund increase is primarily due to fund changes and authority increments within the Divisions of Oil and Gas and Mining, Land, and Water, along with department-wide salary adjustments. The overall total FY25 Governor's amended budget increased by 5.9% from FY24. More details will be provided about significant budget changes on each division slide. When you look at the top table on the right, you'll notice an increase of 8 positions from FY24 management plan to FY25 Governor's amended budget across all position types. This increase is due to new positions added within the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation, the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys, the Office of Project Management and Permitting, and a reclass position from permanent full-time to non-perm in the Division of Forestry and Fire Protection. More information about PCN counts will be provided on each division slide. The three pie charts below show the high-level comparison of our four fund categories by total and percentage of the total operating budget. As you can see, there are very minor changes from FY24 management plan to the proposed FY25 governor's budget. Next slide. As we look at the FY25 governor's amended budget, DNR has 20 different funding sources. When you look at the green comment box on the left, you'll see that the general fund budget includes both unrestricted and designated general funds, totaling approximately $128 million. Unrestricted general funds and designated general funds are 61% of our total operating budget. Now, going back to the table on the right, under designated general funds, most of our general fund program receipt revenue is from park fees, right-of-way leases, material sales, mining leases, recording fees, and seismic data sales. Under the other category, most of our category is made up of statutory designated program receipts, interagency receipts, capital improvement project receipts, mental health trust authority, and permanent fund receipts. When you look at the green comment box on the bottom left, you'll see that based on a 10-year revenue average for every general fund dollar appropriated to DNR, DNR generates $22 in revenue, and we're very proud of this. Next slide. I will now provide an overview on each division's operating budget, their PCN count, and proposed FY25 governor budget changes. We will start with the Division of Forestry and Fire Protection. The division's unrestricted general fund increase is their most significant at just under $5 million. The remaining fund category increases are due to bargain salary and health insurance adjustments. Their total budget increased by 7%, and their PCN count remained the same. Moving on to their FY25 proposed governor's budget changes, line one, mission critical incentive pay to invest in Alaskan wildland firefighters for $1.8 million of unrestricted general funds. This increment will provide incentive pay to 213 wildland fire and resource technicians, increasing their compensation by 32%. We will initially accomplish this incentive pay increase by establishing a letter of agreement followed by permanent solution once the salary study is complete. Incentive pay for ground-level firefighters plays a critical role in the success of the state's ability to maintain firefighter employment and provide adequate, timely response to wildland fires. Firefighter vacancies continue to increase, and recruitment challenges remain due to our state's firefighters receiving compensation that is approximately 46% less than identical work performed by other state and federal agencies. Making the state's firefighters pay competitive will incentivize Alaskans to work for Alaska and ensure that our investment and training will stay in Alaska. For example, the state loses approximately $11,000 invested in specialized training when our experienced firefighters transfer to other agencies. This increment will also assist in reducing costs related to importing firefighters from the lower 48.
Are you finished with fire, forestry and fire?
We have three more.
Go ahead, finish up forestry and fire.
Line 2, Northern Region Warehouse and South Central Crew Facility leases for $1.5 million of unrestricted general funds. This increment will allow the division to secure two new facility leases to fulfill their urgent need for adequate warehouse storage and crew facilities. The Fairbanks Warehouse, which stores approximately $16 million in fire equipment, is in a state of disrepair and can no longer be safely maintained. In addition, our South Central Palmer Crew Facility lease that supports our Gannett, Glacier, and Pioneer Peak 22-person fire crews expires in October of 2024. The division has worked closely with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to gain this $1.5 million lease estimate for both facilities and has formally requested interest from local contractors via the state procurement process. These facility leases are critical in providing public safety, protecting the state's investments in infrastructure, and reducing fire suppression costs. Line 3, fully fund foresters and prioritize forestry road infrastructure for $900,000 of unrestricted general funds. The division requires $900,000 in unrestricted general funds to decrease its reliance on timber sale receipts that partially fund 9 foresters and support positions. Realigning the funding for these positions and transferring $879,000 of timber sale receipts to the services line will allow for crucial bridge replacements, create road access to valuable timber, provide access to lands and resources, reduce costs to individuals and businesses, and create an environment for economic growth. Initial construction and maintenance projects will occur near Fairbanks, Haines, Tanana Valley State Forest, Southeast, and South Central regions of Alaska. To ensure project transparency and timely status reporting, the division will prepare a list of each construction and maintenance project, Each project will have a specific scope of work, timeline for completion, and estimated costs clearly identified in the tracking spreadsheet. This information will be compiled similar to the capital appropriation spend report with status updates made at the end of each fiscal year.
Thank you. Representative Haynes.
Thank you. Through Chair Johnson, Ms. Cross, when the supplemental budget was presented by OMB, we have a large supplemental, as we always do in forestry, and it's not reflected in this. Could you remind me of that supplemental for forestry and fire protection? In my mind, I have $61 million.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, the $61 million is the fire declaration that we received in the fall, and then there are three additional supplementals. There is one to close out the fire season, as we've received additional estimates from our cooperators in the fall and winter, and so that one is currently at $26 million. We have an additional supplemental at $7 million for our spring fire pre-positioning cost, and then because of our aviation contracts have increased, we have a $1.4 million supplemental, and so in total, it's approximately $94 million when you include the declaration.
Madam Chair, I'm sure this is above your pay grade, but I think it's important, Commissioner, that, and I know we're never going to get it spot on, but we need to be better in this budget reflecting what we've actually spent. And right, it's not even reflected here in the management and governor's amend as if it didn't happen. And I don't have any doubt that we need to spend that $94 million, but we need to be able to account for it in a way that we can plan going forward and be within the ballpark for a supplemental. And I'm kind of frustrated that at this point in time, we still don't see that in this budget presentation at all, that, you know, we know there's a large supplemental, and there always is, but we're not even preparing a budget to be within swinging distance. And that makes looking at other things we want to add in when we've got a service we must deliver really hard to balance. So there's my tantrum for the morning, ma'am.
Representative Prog.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So that looks like $94.4 million for a fire season. So I guess I'm just going to reiterate the importance of actually having a very proactive forestry industry to help manage our forests. So we are not, I mean, I would rather see us invest $50 million in the forest industry than spend $100 million fighting fires every year. So I guess it's a catch 22. So I'm going to give you a bite at the apple. So yesterday there was some testimony and the question was brought up of how the expedited timber bill that's sitting over in the other body would help. It wasn't answered that how is it different than what we're doing right now. So could you clarify that for me?
Yeah, thank you, Representative Kronk. Through the chair, this is John Boyle again for the record. I think HB 104 is the number of that bill that would provide DNR with more flexible tools to respond to incidents like insect infestation and other sorts of events where a more proactive stance, getting ahead of the insects or getting ahead of some sort of disease outbreak to thin the forests and be able to harvest some timber ahead of that to try to contain that, I think is a legitimate forest management tool and certainly could go a long way in enabling us to help decrease the amount of wildfire risks that we see. I think making it easier for Alaskans to be able to go out and harvest beetle-killed spruce is another key element to that. And it's frankly one of the things that the department is looking at and greatly appreciates the support from the legislature in those efforts, and that so much of our forestry provisions were built around what was our sort of historic, let's say, timber industry kind of geared towards Southeast. And I don't know that those statutes, that approach necessarily is the best approach as we look across Alaska at the myriad opportunities that we have to manage our forests in different ways, particularly our boreal forests, right? And I think you, and to Representative Hannon's point, I mean, certainly the department has an idea roughly every year of how many acres burn, and I think we have a rough estimate every year of I think the baseline that we factor for wildfire costs is based kind of on that 10-year average. But of course, every year there's a lot of variability. You know, there's the responsibility for even attacking wildfires depends on which part of the state they happen to burn. So some years that onus really falls on the state. And like a couple of years ago when we had a very active wildfire year, unfortunately, almost all of that was in areas that the state is responsible for managing. In other years, maybe more of the burden will fall on the federal government, and so the costs will be less. But I think you're absolutely right in expressing some frustration, or at least charging the department with looking at how we can manage forests differently and be more proactive in preventing wildfire. And I think that's something that's very much the top of our mind. I think our carbon offset projects actually can feed into this by incentivizing enhanced forest management techniques that can thin areas of forest to not only enable the trees to grow better and absorb more carbon, but fundamentally be less flammable. And there's a lot of initiatives that we're looking at in that effort. A few weeks ago, I spent time in the Yukon meeting with my counterpart there, because the Yukon also, of course, deals with wildfire and has a number of communities that are also very susceptible to wildfire. So we are looking at a whole suite of options on how we can be more proactive in that front. And just to tie it all into what's in front of you right now, that's why this line item number one is so important as well, because we have to recruit and retain local wildland firefighters. If I have to pull people up from California or Washington State or somewhere else, it costs an order of magnitude more than it would if I just had people here locally. And then, of course, all that money is just going out of state, right? So the state literally gets no benefit from that other than, of course, being able to manage a large wildfire complex. So part of it's just building the capability internally. I think we want to get up to a preparedness level 3 that enables us to be more proactive in getting on fires more quickly before they get out of control. Obviously, other methodologies like construction of fire breaks and the like also play a part in that. So we appreciate the question, appreciate the legislature's attention to that, because I think as we move forward and we understand that climate is changing, might be more risk to wildfires, we've got to change the way that we approach this to stay ahead of the curve and to ensure that, to Representative Hannon's point, we don't just continue to see these kind of spiraling up wildfire costs, but that we utilize our resources more wisely and see more benefit than that.
Thank you. Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I mean, I think we both had a conversation. We know our timber industry doesn't have a huge profit margin, and whether we go out and harvest timber while it's still standing and alive, or it burns, and then it's a less, you know, valuable product. I mean, we don't live in one big park, you know, and that's what it appears. Everybody wants to keep it as a park, but either way, we're either going to cut it and harvest it and use it for Alaskan, or we're going to watch it burn up in smoke, and then it becomes a less valuable resource. So I just thank you guys for, you know, steering the ship to be very more proactive and benefit our timber industry, because it does create a lot of jobs. It's going to be creating a lot of homes. There's a lot of projects that we see in the future of actually alleviating some of these issues. So thank you for being there and advocating.
All right. Thank you, Representative Kronk. I think it's a great point. But one of the things that I'm wondering, to Representative Hannah's point, if we could get some, I mean, I think we have this conversation, we've had it more than once about the supplemental, and not having it reflected is, you know, it does leave to people that have been here for a while to try to figure out, you know, how and what we're going to see. So it occurs to me that maybe what we should do is, do you put together any kind of like white page report on where you spent your money in the supplemental, like it's in? I don't know that we need to fund more into. I kind of like the supplemental in a sense because you're not taking a whole bunch of money off the table to not be able to spend anywhere else, and you're actually spending it on where and what you've used it for, because it is so variable. But it seems to me like, you know, I don't think I would want a glossy long report, but some kind of, you know, short overview of where, when we do get a supplemental, of, you know, why and where it came from, because like you said, the state land, well, we don't know that, you know, we're just sitting here, we don't have any clue about a lot of these things. So I think it could be informative and actually help us make better decisions when we're going forward, instead of, gee, that DNR, they sure soak up a whole lot of that fire money, where does that go? So because that's not what I think at all, but you know, we want to be able to explain that to people. So anyway, I'll follow up with you on that perhaps. And then I know that I'm going to have to find the hard stop. I'm kind of trying to figure out what that is right now. DNR always, we always like to talk to DNR. So, but we'll go ahead with questions, and there's possibility, I guess, we may have to come back later this afternoon. So we have Representative Ortiz, Representative Colom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very quickly, you know, I concur with the comments from Representative Kronk about, you know, a better long-term planning, and you concur with it as well, long-term planning process about how to manage our forests and manage wildfires, et cetera, try to prevent wildfires. I think that's very spot on. However, in the immediate future, getting back to Representative Hannon's point, in the current governor's budget in relationship to fire, fighting fires, et cetera, I mean, it's below historical averages by a lot. And it just makes it hard for us to plan for other things when we know that in reality, there's likely to be another significant supplemental next year based on just historical averages. So would the department be supportive of the idea of getting a more realistic number in there from a year-to-year process, just so that it helps us, you know, realize point blank that, no, we don't really have this extra money because we know we're going to be likely spending a lot more money, at least in the immediate future, than what's currently in the budget. You see what I'm getting at? Would you be supportive of actions like that?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Ortiz, John Boyle again for the record. We are supportive of that. I think you're asking all the same questions that I ask, right, which is how can we better budget for this? How can we better anticipate what our costs are? And to Representative Johnson's earlier request, I think we'd be happy to put that report together because there are certain cost drivers. As Representative Kronk mentioned, pulling crews up from the lower 48, that's a big one. Like anytime we have to bring an incident management team from out of state, it's just like seeing the meter run in the taxi cab. I mean, it just ticks up and it goes quick. So, yes, I think we'd certainly happy to work with the committee in trying to put together better numbers. I mean, I guess there's part of me in a way that feels like it's like asking us to predict the stock market to a certain extent too, because if I could do that with any accuracy, I wouldn't be sitting here right now, right? But last year, you know, was a very interesting year too, because we basically went through the middle of July, we were at the lowest level of acres burned in state history, because the entire state was wet for the most part. And so, you know, I'd love to take credit for that as commissioner, and I was taking credit for it for a period of time. And then, you know, by about the end of July, things dried out. We had a weather system move across interior Alaska where over the course of a weekend, I think we had something like 30 or 40,000 lightning strikes. And then from then on, it was lit up. And then again, we had some significant wildfires in the Anderson area that were impacting Clear Air Force Base. We had a significant wildfire impacting the Pogo Mine Road and areas in that vicinity. And of course, I mean, that's part of the critical work that fire protection does, is ensuring that, I mean, Pogo Mine continued to need to use that road. And I was literally driving on that, watching the wildfire burn on both sides, right? And so ensuring that we could keep that mine in operation and ensuring that we were protecting the military's facilities and the even the homesteaders that are out, just kind of out in the woods, these are all really important things. So, but I guess to answer your question, yes, we're happy to kind of work with the committee, provide as much information as we can. Of course, we do have historic data. So, I mean, you can sort of find an average and then use that as a baseline. And then, of course, every year then you're at the mercy of the weather gods to see how it ultimately shakes out. But I think it's a good start.
Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Through the chair, and I think this is probably for Director Cross. I'm asking something totally different than what's been talked about. So I wanted clarification on the 900,000 increment. So my understanding is that you're taking money out of personal services, funding a capital, basically capital request, and replacing the personal services with UGF. Am I understanding that right?
Through the chair, Representative Cologne, what we're doing is right now within the timber sale receipts, they are using the majority of that revenue to pay for 9 positions personal services, which is hindering our ability to do the crucial bridge replacements and road projects. And so in order for us to continue to make improvement to be able to continue to build our timber industry, we have asked for $900,000 of unrestricted general funds to pay for those 9 positions. And then within the timber sale receipt bucket of money, we will do a transfer from the 1,000 line, which is personal services, down to the 3,000 line in order to do this maintenance and construction work.
A follow-up?
Follow-up.
This is in the base. This is not just a temporary issue that you're trying to fix these bridges. This is, you're going to be funding this with UGF from now on, not timber sale receipts.
Through the chair, Representative Cologne, we will actually be funding it with timber sale receipts now. We will be funding these bridge replacements and maintenance with the timber sale receipts, and then we'll be funding the personal services of the positions with unrestricted general funds. And so we are open in the future to making an adjustment and moving some of the timber sale receipts into a capital appropriation. But this was our first initial step of getting the personal services funding off of timber sale receipts so that we can start this work.
Follow up? You're looking at continuing to fund personal services with UGF, not the timber sale receipts. And I just had one other question, if I may.
Sure.
On the 94 million and the 1.8 for the incentive pay, and this may just be a follow-up, I'd like to know, out of all this money, how much is actually incentive pay and how much is it going, maybe kind of a breakout of how much is this going directly to firefighters?
Through the chair, Representative Cologne, the supplementals that we have requested for FY24 are not part of incentive pay. That is to pay for incurred costs that we've already had in the last fire season and what we're anticipating for the spring. And so the $1.8 million would be fully incentive pay starting in FY25.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
All right. And so I wanted to make note just for committee reference. So we have a hard stop at 10 a.m. The purpose of the meeting is not to replicate the subcommittee work. I'm okay with asking questions as long as we can get through our presentation. And I haven't found great stopping points. I'd like to have just maybe one or two stopping points for questions between now and the end of the presentation. So I'm kind of thinking if we could go up through the division, start go up through, but not including the division oil and gas, and then we can take some questions at that point and move on after that. Thank you.
Thank you once again. For the record, my name is Teresa Cross, Administrative Services Director. The last item within the Division of Forestry and Fire Protection is Line 4. It's the annual maintenance on heavy equipment for the safety of Alaskans for $84,000. This increment will allow the division to complete annual maintenance on 9 new pieces of heavy equipment through the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities State Equipment Fleet Program. The division has been coordinating with the state equipment fleet team to order and receive new heavy equipment. Consistent annual maintenance is required to protect the initial investment and maximize the lifespan of the equipment, which provides a significant cost savings compared to renting heavy equipment. The new equipment will help maintain 400 miles of existing logging roads in the interior Alaska, facilitate fuels reduction projects in South Central, and build new roads to create access to roadless forests. This effort will also enable the implementation of tree planting, timber harvest, and carbon offset projects. Next slide. Next will be the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation. The division's designated general funds and other category increases are their most significant at just under $500,000 each. You will notice a 53% UGF increase, but that is only because their FY24 UGF authority is so minimal, making the new boating safety language item appear more significant than it is. The remaining fund category increases are due to bargain salary and health insurance adjustments. Their total budget increased by 7%, and the PCN count increased by 5, making their total 174. Now moving on to their FY25 governor's budget requests. Line 1, maintain fleet and ensure reliable emergency response for Alaskan safety, $300,000 of designated general funds. The division must ensure funding for regular and timely replacement of off-road vehicles and boats that are not part of the state equipment fleet maintenance program. These vehicles are crucial for search and rescue response, parks and wildlife enforcement, and emergency response in Alaska's off-highway and remote areas. The current fleet is aging, with many vehicles reaching end of life and parts becoming unavailable for repairs. This increase to the division's general fund program receipt authority mitigates the risks associated with relying on outdated and unreliable equipment. This request prioritizes the life and safety of our employees and Alaskans. Line 2, meet the demand of design and construction infrastructure work for $375,000 of capital improvement project receipts and 3 permanent full-time positions. This increment will add 2 engineering assistant 2s and 1 engineer architect 2 within the design and construction section to improve and develop state parks. These 3 permanent positions will focus on advancing capital projects, ensuring public safety, compliance with regulations, and providing timely technical support to other state agencies. The influx in federal funding through the Land and Water Conservation Fund and the National Recreation Trails programs provides a multitude of funding opportunity for parks projects to enhance the visitor experience. These positions will optimize the utilization of Alaska's share of federal grant funding in state parks for the benefit of Alaskans. Line 3. Restore management of Delta Area Parks and Recreation for $210,000 of designated general funds and 2 permanent full-time positions. The division will restore the management of 7 Delta State Park units. These locations are in need of additional maintenance and upgrade in order to sufficiently meet the standards of state park unit management. An increase in the division's general fund program receipt authority will fund a park ranger 1 and a park specialist to revitalize these sites, restore their local importance and cultural significance, create a thriving recreational experience for visitors, and boost local economies through increased spending on accommodations, dining, and other amenities. I'd like to note a correction to our change record. Both positions will be stationed in Delta, not Fairbanks, and will be co-located with the Division of Forestry and Fire Protection in their office in Delta. Lastly, for parks, Line 4, boating safety receipts. This is a language item and $281,300 of unrestricted general funds. This boating safety program request removes $306,300 of boat registration fee authority from the numbers section and adds $281,300 of unrestricted general funds in the language section. $281,300 is legal to the amount of boat registration fees collected in the prior year. The intention is to allow boat registration fees to lapse to the general fund, then appropriate an equal amount of UGF in the following year. This approach will allow for more predictability since the amount of boat registration fees collected each year is uncertain and not available for appropriation until late in the fiscal year. The Kids Don't Float and Save It for the Shore campaigns include the procurement of youth and adult life jackets, safety equipment, instructional materials, course delivery, and personal watercraft safety programs. This language item will be updated annually based on actual revenue collected in the most recently ended fiscal year, not to exceed $500,000. Next slide, please. Next will be the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. The division's designated general fund increased by just under $1.9 million, and the other category increased by approximately $500,000. You will notice an UGF and Fed reduction due to fund changes and the end of a three-year one-time UGF increment related to RS-2477. The remaining fund category changes are due to bargain salary and health insurance adjustments. Their total budget increased by 5.3%, and the PCN count remained the same at 225. Moving on to their budget changes, line 1, Advancing States' Rights and Navigability and Revised Statute 2477 for $741,000 of designated general funds. The division was appropriated a three-year one-time increment between FY22 and FY24 of $695,000 to accomplish the governor's initiative of managing uplands, developing resources, and increasing Alaskans' ownership of land consistent with the unique federal and state laws. The temporary operating...
And you can maybe just summarize as you go through. So you're hitting your high points.
Okay.
Or provide the report that you're reading from to the committee.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
This funding will pay for the personal services of 3 permanent positions and the necessary ongoing work related to RS-2477. Line 2, increased capital receipt authority to accommodate additional project activity for $500,000 of capital improvement project authority. The division requests this technical increase to the capital improvement project authority due to an increase that they've seen over the last 3 years in capital projects. Line 3, realign personal services funding to assist with employee retention efforts. This is a fund change of $400,000 of designated general funds. The division requests to realign personal services authority to reflect actual spending through a fund change. This request will reduce statutory designated program receipt authority by $100,000 and federal authority by $300,000. Next slide. Next will be the Division of Support Services. The division's unrestricted general fund increased by approximately $800,000. The remaining fund category increases are due to bargain salary and health insurance adjustments. Their total budget increased by 6.1%. The PCN count remained the same at 89. They only have one budget change. This is line 1, Fairbanks and Alley Building lease renewal for $578,000 of unrestricted general funds. This increment within the Support Services Division Facilities component will provide the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys with the funding required for their building lease in Fairbanks. The Department of Transportation and Public Facilities began a search for an alternative building location in 2022 and concluded that there were none suitable. Next slide. Next will be the Division of Agriculture. The minimal fund category increases are due to bargain salary and health insurance adjustment. Their total budget increased by 2.2%. The PCN count remained the same at 37. The division did not have FY25 budget changes, so we wanted to highlight a few of their accomplishments that you can see on the screen. The division continues to administer over $6 million in USDA grants in recent years, with $2.3 million in microgrants for food security set to kick off this spring.
All right, we are going to pause now for questions. One question I had was on, I had the privilege to tour the some of the agricultural facilities up in Delta this summer. And I know one of the requests was to be able to store more, have more storage space and potentially have some money to keep the co-op funded throughout the year. And I thought I had heard that maybe something good had happened there, and I was wondering if you could give us an update on that.
Sure, Chair Johnson. This is John Boyle again for the record. So I believe you're referring to our Delta Grain Barley Reserve Program, where the state is helping to support a co-op that can buy a certain quantity of barley grown every year to ensure that we, one, provide a kind of consistent level of demand for farmers so that it creates more market opportunities for them, and also ensures a measure of food security in that, you know, what precipitated that is we had, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, we had a very rainy season. It impacted the amount of barley that was ultimately harvestable across the state, and so we were left with some livestock producers needing to import barley from the lower 48 in order to feed their livestock. And so the purpose of this program is really to start building out that safety net to ensure that every year, if, you know, as we think of the biblical analogy of the 7 years of feast and famine, but it's that same principle. Some years you're going to have higher yield crops, so instead of just kind of seeing that value be distributed or evaporated because there's not demand for it, having this reserve enables us to keep it, store it, and then provide grain for our agricultural community when they need it. So I think it'll be a key driver and just an example of these kind of a chicken and egg issues that we're dealing with ag, where if we make some smart investments in infrastructure and help start growing more consistent demand, it'll enable farmers to grow more and to expand their operations, and hopefully we'll see that multiplier effect as a result of that.
Very good. Representative Ortiz. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it's been a while, but I thought I saw your hand. Okay. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair, I have a couple questions back on page 8, Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And I guess I'll start with the one that's not there, which is I was hoping to see some interest in more money spent on invasive species, and I think it's in that section. Visited the we don't call it the experimental farm in Palmer, the facility where, and you know, it was really clear that we got one guy and one boat and working to eradicate Elodia, and we need to spend more money and time and energy on it, but we don't see any requests for it. Is there a reason? Or
yeah, through the chair, Representative Hannon. So yeah, that was at our Plant Material Center in Palmer, and that effort is led by our Division of Agriculture. And I believe we have Brian Scoresby online, who's our director of that division. Maybe he can go into the details of what we're currently doing in that arena.
Brian, Mr. Scoresby, are you online? I don't know that he is online.
Do you see a Mia Kirk?
Excuse me?
Do you see a Mia Kirk on there? She's our kind of deputy director.
There must have been an agricultural crisis this morning. Maybe someone there. They
it's been a run on eggs.
Yeah. So we'll try.
So Representative Hand through the chair. Yeah, we will get back with you with a status update on that program.
And then I have a second question.
Yes, follow up.
On the Vision of Mining, Land, and Water, the first budget request, number one, of advancing states' right navigability for $741,000. It's my understanding that $365,000 of that is for legal services, and I am curious why, because the Department of Law has several million for that same mission. Why do we need to fund it here if we've got a couple million over at Department of Law to do the legal part of that? I understand DNR needing the expertise from the the land guys, but the legal part of it, it looks like Department of Law has several million towards that. So I'm wondering why we need the 365.
Thank you. For the record, Deputy Commissioner Brent Goodrum, through the chair, Representative Hannon. Many of the work, much of the work that the department in the division does with regards to gathering information, going to the field, all of that is encumbered by the division. And oftentimes, pre-litigation, we bring on experts that go to the field with us. Many of the locations you can't drive to, and so it requires, you know, the contracting with aviation and other things. And so anything that's pre a court setting or a filing in court, those are all costs that are encumbered by the division and the work that we do. Once we get into a formal filing within the court system, Department of Law then will contract with those legal services, those experts that we get in the field on geomorphology and navigability and other aspects of that. So up front, it is the department that does a lot of this work. And again, we're covering the entirety of the state. We will be working, you know, in the North Slope, you know, north of the Brooks Range this year. We'll be in other parts in South Central. It's a statewide effort. And so those costs are borne by the division, and it's critical that we do the boots on the ground gathering of that information up front so that we can take information to Department of Law and finalize those efforts where we have disagreements with the federal government.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Representative Colom.
Thank you, Chair Johnson, through the chair. And I'm not sure who could answer this, but so I'm back on page 7 with the Parks and Outdoor Rec. And the park ranger and park specialist for Delta Area Parks. So that's two new positions. I'm wondering, so my concern is Chugach Park access, and we're getting overrun, at least at the access in Anchorage. And it's by far the most traffic, like there's the highest traffic is in Chugach State Park. And I did see that there was an increase in the funding in general for that, but I didn't know if there was somebody who would speak to, it's not that I oppose, you know, helping Delta, but what's going on with Chugach Park access, if there's any plans to strengthen those areas.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Colom, I believe we should have Ricky Geese online, our Director of Parks and Outdoor Recreation. Assuming yes. We're not also having a parks emergency as well this morning.
Mr. Geist, did you hear the question?
Yes. For the record, my name is Ricky Geist. I'm the Division Director for Parks and Outdoor Recreation for DNR. Through the chair, Representative Colom, we have a in terms of triage needs of where we need additional staff, the Delta State Park areas in the northern region is a critical area. Typically, we meet with all our superintendents and kind of rank where we have the greatest need. And that area currently right now is in need of, we have about six units there that have been under passive management and consignment. We've had concessionaires operate that area. They may or may not be able to move forward after this year. Their agreement ends. And we're being proactive in asking a request for the Delta State Park area. In terms of Chugach State Park, it is the most visited public lands in the state of Alaska. We are trying to put as much resources as we can that we have access to through our budgets. And currently right now, we have a lot of capital money that is going in terms of paving parking lots, providing additional parking. That's where we did a lot of trying to deal with the demand and the increasing demand for Chugach State Park.
Follow up. Is there any plans to increase any PCNs around Chugach Park access?
Through the chair, Representative Columbus, at this point, we are looking at that, and there may be a request in either next year or a subsequent year budget for that. But we will look at that and see what our resources are in terms of our general fund program receipts and the vehicle rental tax, which funds the operating budget. If we have capacity to take on additional people, Chugach would be one of the likely be one of the priority areas where we would make such investments.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
So we are
on slide 11, and we have 25 more minutes. Let's go ahead and let's go ahead and go through page 13, and then we'll take another break.
Next will be the Division of Oil and Gas. The division's designated general fund increased by just under $1 million, and the Fed category increased by approximately $100,000. You will notice a unrestricted general fund and other category reduction due to fund changes. The remaining fund category changes are due to bargain salary and health insurance adjustments. Their total budget increased by 2.2%. The PCN count remained the same at 92. They have three governor's budget changes, lines 1, 2, and 3. They are fund changes. The division requests multiple fund changes by reducing $500,000 in unrestricted general fund authority and a total of $485,000 in statutory designated program receipt authority, while increasing general fund program receipt authority by $885,000 and federal authority by $100,000. This will align the expenditures and the revenue related to the services the division provides. Next will be the Office of Project Management and Permitting. Their unrestricted general fund increased by just over $200,000. The remaining fund category changes are due to bargain salary and health insurance adjustments. Their total budget increased by 3%, and their PCN count increased by 1, bringing their total to 14. They had one governor's budget change. This is line 1, administrative support for carbon offset program, $176,000 of unrestricted general funds. The office requests a new administrative officer 1 to provide administrative and project support through SB 48 carbon offset program on state land. This position will support the newly appointed carbon manager in successfully developing and implementing state projects for the state carbon offset program and boosting the state's economy with this new state revenue. Next slide. Next will be the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. Their unrestricted general fund increased by just under $1.2 million. The remaining fund category changes are due to salary and health insurance adjustments. Their total budget increased by 11.9%. Their PCN count increased by 2, bringing their total to 68. They have one item. Powering Alaska's Future with Geothermal Energy for $1 million of unrestricted general funds and 2 full-time positions. This increment will create a 3-person geothermal program to begin the geothermal characterization work. One existing permanent full-time geologist 4 will be repurposed to this program, and there will be one new geologist 3 and one GIS analyst 3 recruited for in Anchorage or Fairbanks. The division's initial stage of geothermal characterization work is distinct and will be coordinated with the university, federal, native, and private sector partners' ongoing initiatives. In order for the state to attract capital and industry capital, develop geothermal power plants, the state must have regional scale geologic information to identify the most promising geothermal areas to target. All data and results will be published and freely available to the public and industry through the division's easily accessible databases and published technical reports online.
All right, that brings us to our next stopping point. I want to make sure we give people an opportunity to ask any questions that they might want to ask about geophysical, geological, and oil, et cetera. So, yeah, thanks. I just want to make sure that if anyone else has any questions, All right, Representative Hannah.
Chair Johnson, thank you, through the chair. My question is on slide 12 on OPUMP and the carbon offset program addition. When we passed SB 48, there was a fiscal note with staffing. Could you remind me how much that was, how many positions we added in the bill, and have we seen an increase in the demand for it that we need another one? I'm looking to figure out if we wrote the fiscal note wrong or to predict what it was going to cost us to implement that.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, carbon offset program on state land, SB 48, we received $493,600 of unrestricted general funds with three permanent full-time positions. One position was within the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, one within the Office of Project Management and Permitting, and one within the Division of Forestry and Fire Protection. Within DMLW and OPUMP, both positions have been filled. Within Forestry and Fire Protection, they have selected the candidate, and they start this month. And then this is a continuation for FY25 to add that additional administrative support position once the program was established.
So maybe I can add on to that, Representative Hannon, since you had a multi-part question to the chair. We are currently in the regulation promulgation process in getting our forest offsets program off the ground. I think to date the department has received close to a dozen different proposals from prospective project developers. And of course, we're just at a period of time to where we need to finish the regulation process so that we have a framework in place to evaluate these different proposals and then, you know, make a determination of which of these potential projects is within the state's best interest. And so that regulation process should be completed by roughly the middle of the year, hopefully early summer in the June timeframe. And then from that point on, we should then be in the position to start walking our way through these proposals to see what actually materialized into a project on state land.
One follow-up?
Quickly.
So through the chair. So Commissioner, I guess I'm just concerned, and it kind of is a supplemental thing. I'm surprised that we didn't have an administrative support position in the fiscal note for that bill. So this will be an additional add-on to the base to implement a program that we sometime anticipate will generate some revenue for the state. But it appears to me like this is a logical thing that you'd need to be able to support. We'd need the administrative support to really execute this program, and that either we didn't contemplate that or we're overwhelmingly getting more response than we thought, which would be a great thing. But, I'm hoping that maybe next year we're going to see some revenue coming from that.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, this administrative support position was part of that fiscal note. The three positions that I just discussed were ones for FY24, and this one was slated for FY25. We wanted to ensure that we got these three positions filled and stable and then incorporated that additional position. So it's part of the original fiscal note.
So Madam Chair, when there's a multi-year fiscal note, it doesn't automatically come along? That's...
Yes.
So they've just said that last year's fiscal note was for FY24, but this position was always in that fiscal note of coming on board in FY25. But we've got to add it in again to the base. I would have thought that when we adopted that fiscal note, that it already put it in there. But.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, it's our understanding that even when positions are added in the fiscal note, we still have to go through the process with OMB to request those positions. And so that's the approach we took for FY25.
We do have some, if you would like a more of an explanation, we have someone here in the room that could maybe come forward. And Laura, I also want to remind everyone that Representative Kronk is the subcommittee co-chair, and he is digging in the budget and has also, he and his staff have a lot of information on the department, as well as the department being available for additional questions offline and at a future time if you would like, if you don't get the questions answered or think of something after the presentation is over. It is the proper, according to staff, it is the proper way to prepare a fiscal note.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a first term on finance, and when we do those fiscal notes, we spend a lot of time grunting and groaning about them. So I just thought when they were multi-year, they were embedded in the base. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Galvin. And then we have a hard stop at 10 o'clock. Just a reminder to everyone, we have three slides. We don't have a lot, but we need to make this our last question and make it brief, and then we'll be able to finish up the presentation.
Great, thanks. This is my only question, and it's around the slide 13, should be pretty simple. The geothermal project, I think I heard you say a couple of lines about one position moving over, but then there's two positions, so now it's a three position. Does that mean that the million that is being allocated is for two positions or for three positions, number one? And number two, do you have, if you could just give me more information about that particular project, if you have sites identified and kind of generally how that money will be spent, that'd be great. Thanks. Yeah,
Representative Galvin, through the chair, this is John Boyle again for the record. So I believe that funding will apply to the two positions as denoted on the slide. And really the purpose of this program is a recognition that the state has not dedicated resources to understanding our geothermal potential. And as most of you are aware, we're currently facing an energy shortfall in the Cook Inlet. And I think from the state's perspective, while we're going to work closely with this committee and others on solutions around addressing that, the short-term implications of what's going on in the Cook Inlet, thinking longer term, it's incumbent upon the state, I think, to look at potentially developing all of our potential energy resources of all stripes. Geothermal really sticks out because, as most members of this committee are aware, we live in a very seismically active area. We're Alaska's located on the Ring of Fire and in relatively close proximity to our most populated area sits a string of volcanoes. And so really the purpose of this program is to get this office up and running. And then I think our first priorities are going to be doing that early characterization work, particularly in the Cook Inlet, to where we can see and understand what the hydrological and geothermal systems are in that area and map that out, and then hopefully be able to use that data to help incentivize companies and entities interested in developing geothermal power to come and take a closer look. Because the one thing that we are aware of is that geothermal technology is rapidly advancing. And even just within the last few years, they've really been able to expand the toolkit of different options that they have to utilize geothermal resources, even in areas where the underlying geothermal resources maybe aren't as ideal. And so it's high time for Alaska to just glean a great understanding of this, but also being mindful that this isn't just about a science project. It's really about doing this in a targeted way that's focused on delivering energy solutions for the state, and that includes the rail belt, and that also includes areas that are not attached to the rail belt, where we also have geothermal systems that could help provide reliable, renewable, low-cost energy for communities that aren't currently connected to the grid. So I'm very enthusiastic about this. I mean, frankly, this is kind of my pet thing. But I think there's a lot of potential in the state, and we're very keen to get this off the ground.
May I have a follow-up?
Quickly. Actually, yes, you have a follow-up, but just if you would ask it briefly and answer briefly, please.
Do you have a plan for that $1 million for a specific office space or a scope of work?
Yeah, Representative Galvin, through the chair, I believe we have a scope of work already in the works. And, you know, the office space, we have adequate office space at our facility in Fairbanks. So I think we're ready to go.
All right, very good. All right, let's finish up. We just have a last few slides, and then that will keep you from having to come back later this afternoon.
So slide 14 will be the Trustland office. They are supported by mental health trust funding. They follow a zero-based budgeting each fiscal year. So the $100,000 increase you see in their other category is due to salary adjustments. Their total budget increased by 2.1%, and their PCN count remained the same. And since they did not have significant budget changes, I highlighted some of their accomplishments and priorities that you can see on the slide. Next slide will be the Office of the Commissioner. Very minor fund changes due to salary adjustments. Their total budget increased by 1.6%. PCN count remained the same at 10, and they also didn't have FY25 budget changes, and so we highlighted some of our Commissioner's Office accomplishments, most notably the adjudication of 35 appeals in FY23. And then lastly, slide 16. This is our vacancy data and recruitment initiatives. I'll give an overview of our department's current vacancy rate, each division's vacancy rate, and the recruitment and retention efforts and internal strategy that we have employed to manage the statewide vacancy challenges. As you can see on the vacancy table on the left, our overall department vacancy rate is 16.1% as of January 31st of 2024. Our department's vacancy rate has continued to decline over the last 14 months. Our lowest division vacancy rate is within the Trustland office at 0%, and our highest is in the Office of Project Management and Permitting at 30.8%, but that's due to their low PCN count. Our recruitment and retention initiatives include transitioning 11 job class series to competency-based MQs, affecting roughly 300 PCNs at DNR, expanding our natural resource specialist jobs to accommodate non-supervisory career paths. We've reduced processing of our recruitment timelines to under 2 business days for postings and hire approvals. And we also have successfully utilized hybrid telework to promote a work-life balance. As the commissioner mentioned, our culture and supporting each other. Currently, we have 44% of DNR's employees are utilizing a hybrid telework, and 56% are in the office full-time. Our internal strategy to meet the department's mission through these vacancy and recruitment challenges include reclassifying and modifying positions to flexibly staffed, utilizing acting status, moving PCN duty stations to broaden the applicant pools, hiring short and long-term non-perm positions, offering advanced step placements, and extending seasonal work months for certain positions. We are also very excited to share that DNR is one of 4 departments that will begin utilizing the new recruitment tool called Attract later this month. Agencies like DNR are seeing a decrease of up to 52% of the number of applicants for each job posting. Attract leverages our database of prospective job seekers by categorizing their experience and work history into a searchable system, and then issues automated notifications to up to 66,000 individuals in Alaska that may be a good fit. This is done through email campaigns, custom information landing pages, virtual recruiter notifications, and is supported by intelligent database analytics. DNR was one of the departments that rigorously tested Attract during the pilot testing phase, and it has shown to, on average, increase our applicant pool tested by 36% just using the virtual recruiter tool. We look forward to sharing data on how the Attract tool positively impacted our department's recruitment efforts and our vacancy rate during next legislative session.
Thank you. All right, we made it through our presentation with 3 minutes to spare. And Representative Cross, would you like to make a comment?
I'm going to get one more plug in here on forestry. I was thinking about this. Whether we harvest timber before fire, after fire, but people don't realize, like, a birch tree. You know, our native people used to build birch bark canoes and bowls because it held water. If a forest fire goes through a timber, a section of birch, those trees will just stand there and rot because it holds all the moisture in them. So I guess I'm throwing a plug in for the expedited timber, because you have to have a commissioner that's willing and a forester that's willing to put those sales up immediately. Otherwise, that is just wasted wood that we did not cut. And likewise, when a you know, spruce burn, you have a very short shelf life. So what we're seeing is with our process we have is it's very slow. And as we keep it slow, this stuff is just becoming worthless standing there. And I guess that's my plug for it, is this is why we're asking for these measures, because let's use some of this resource versus letting it just stand there and either be burned or not be usable because it takes so long. And we know the profit margin is very slim anyways. And these guys are creating and producing products, yet it's the bureaucracy that slows this down and your hands are tied and we just watch this valuable resource not be used. So just wanted to throw that plug in there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for the presentation this morning. We have, I want to make note again that the department's available if you have questions that are you haven't had a chance to ask this morning or find additional information. Our next meeting is today at 1:30, and the committee will be receiving subcommittee closeout reports. Seeing no further business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned.